Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today, we'll be talking the way to fry. And in the studio, we have Mr. Norman King, editor, guest kitchen expert at Southern Living.
Yes,
Norman,
ma'am.
Welcome to Hot Grease.
Well, thank you for having me.
Look, the way to fry hot grease.
I'm telling you, this match made in heaven.
I know, right? So look, for people who are listening for the first time, we have to do a Southern Living one-on-one. Some people may really not know what Southern Living Magazine is.
Okay, well, I can tell you. Southern Living Magazine has been pretty much a, for lack of a better term, expert resource of all things Southern. Our pillars are home, garden, travel, and cooking, which is what I particularly focus on in the magazine. What we do, we're known for our tested recipes, our expert advice, and also accessibility to our readers. That's pretty much what we do. That's our main goal. That's our main service, is just serving the reader, giving them great recipes, giving them great Southern life. And that's it.
And Southern Living has been around for how long?
47 years.
Really?
Just about, I think, 46 or 47.
Yeah, I always hear people say it's really like the Bible of Southern culture.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent. It's been on a lot of coffee tables and a lot of dentist offices for a very long time. The cool thing about Southern Living is that we've always kept a foot in heritage and in our Southern roots, but we've also been able to grow kind of in a push these new things. Like a lot of times we call it the New South, and just kind of basically opening up our world to what's current. And that's pretty much what a lot of the stuff happened. That's how the way to fry came about, actually. Was it was kind of one of those things where Southern food had this whole stigma behind it before.
Right.
It's been greasy and that, and then it got really popular, blew up, so you have a lot of really great chefs in the South. When we knew for a long time that Southern food was great, but now a lot of people are catching on to it. So with coming out with these newer, kind of fresher takes on classic things,
right,
is how the way to fry kind of came about.
I have to talk about, I can't have you in the studio and not talk about Birmingham.
Yes, ma'am.
Southern Living Magazine is based in Birmingham, Alabama. I promise you, over the last 4 weeks, if I haven't read one article, I've read a million articles about how Birmingham is the next hot city.
Birmingham is fly. It is. I really like it. When I moved there, it was a very different kind of a place for me to go. Very friendly, but I was surprised at all the potential that it had. There's a lot of the infrastructure there is set up really well, and I think that that's part of that whole kind of push that people are seeing about how it's like the next place, because it's set up really well. The actual layout is set up really well. So you've got a lot of award-winning chefs. Frank Stitt is like the main player.
Yes,
there.
I love his
Chris
food.
Hastings.
He's been on Heritage before.
Chris Hastings is awesome.
Yeah.
So he's doing a lot of stuff with the Alabama Gulf Seafood, and that's really blowing up too. There's just so much stuff. It's a really great architectural town. It's a great art town. It's a great food town. So I think,
what about music?
Music, fantastic. Fantastic. There's a lot of great live musicians. I would have never thought that there was that many talents there. And like, you know, American Idols, you know, Ruben.
Oh,
Sutter,
yeah.
You know,
I forgot about that.
Like three or four of them from, or maybe three of them are from Birmingham.
Yeah, one of my best friend's mom, my best friend actually, she's from Birmingham. Her mother says all the time that Birmingham was supposed to be the Atlanta.
Yeah.
But
I heard that.
People in Birmingham back in, I guess, what, the 60s mm-hmm. or whatever, or 50s, I don't know, whatever year, they were like, no, we do not want an international airport in our city.
Right.
So the airport actually went to Atlanta. Yep. So supposedly that's why the growth of Birmingham is a little...
It's a little slow. But the good thing about Birmingham also is that it's centrally located in the South. So to the north, you've got Nashville, you've got... New Orleans to the south, Jackson to the west, and then Atlanta to the east. So it's a great little hub.
There you have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask you this before we move on.
Mm-hmm.
Your favorite spots to eat in Birmingham?
My favorite spots, I love Flip Burger. That's one of Richard Blaze's.
Oh,
place.
Wow. They have one of those in Birmingham?
Yeah. Yes, they have one of those
oh,
in Birmingham.
Oh, wow. I mean, I always think about an ATL yeah. when I hear Flip Burger.
Yeah, Flip is probably, that's just my place. I like it because it's comfortable. I love their little cycle menu. When I go out, I'm just a hamburger kind of guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything too fancy. So that, and then they've got like Pinkberry there and Steel City Pops, which is like an ice cream kind of pop shop that's new.
What about coffee?
Coffee, there's Octane.
Oh, and another Atlanta transplant.
I'm trying to tell you. No, here's what happened. One of the guys that we hang out with manages the spot there. And they were originally, they had a roaster called Primavera.
Uh-huh.
And they made this really awesome coffee roasted. And they were just roasters. So they partnered with Octane to bring that to Birmingham. And so they roast all of the beans for the Octanes in Atlanta
cool.
and in Birmingham.
Cool. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back okay. and talk more The Way to Fry with Norman King. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Blessed Memory by Blind Benny on heritageradionetwork.org.
We're chatting with Norman King. His new book is out now, folks. It's called The Way to Fry by Southern Living. Fresh, fabulous recipes for the modern Southern cook. So, life in the test kitchen.
Yes,
you
ma'am.
Are the test kitchen person at Southern Living.
One of them.
One of them. Okay.
Of them.
So, give me a typical day.
A typical day for us starts at the grocery store. We usually shop before we come in, we get our recipes and we talk about our concepts and what we're working on for the upcoming issues. And we're usually 3 to 6 months out. So like now it's August, September for me. So my food schedule is always all mm-hmm. messed up. Well, we shop for that. I come in, get everything organized, and I make coffee every morning. And I work.
Oh, wow. You're the coffee guy.
I'm the coffee guy because I work with some fabulous ladies, and that is the way to get them on your good side in the morning. It's just to kind of have some coffee and sit down and talk and, you know, be Southern. And then we just get into our production schedule. We start cooking our recipes. We go through our regular testing process. And our kitchens are actually set up like somebody's home would be set up. So we've got counter space issues and cabinets and obstacles that a regular home cook is going to run into. So a lot of that stuff gets brought into our testing. After we prepare all of our dishes, we all sit down at a table and we taste and discuss what's going on. And that takes, you know, about an hour and a half to an hour to complete. And then from there, we take our notes down and then we go back and edit our recipes and put in any kind of notes, things that we want to work on. And then it starts all over again.
So it sounds like really you guys are having a great time. It seems like a lot of hard work because I'm working on a book now and that recipe testing thing is really interesting.
Yeah, because it's all about the language. And we have a Southern Living style that all of our stuff has to be written into. So it's not just saying make a simple syrup for, let's say you're making a cocktail. We have to tell you, you need to boil a cup of sugar and a cup of water
no assumptions.
Over medium heat for 2 to 3 minutes. stirring occasionally until sugars dissolve, and then let cool for 30 minutes. Like, that has to go into our recipes because we're taking it from a point where we want our readers to succeed at everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that language is built in there. So it's a very precise way, but we also have to kind of unlearn all of our culinary habits,
right,
and be able to kind of tell people what's going on. So as you kind of evolve in your role in the test kitchen, you start to learn the way to explain what you're doing to people in a very simple way. It's very succinct. Like we found out the other day, trying to fry or lightly pan fry this one particular dish was causing us problems in a stainless steel pan. So we had to switch to a nonstick because at the heat that was needed, we felt that it would be too much risk for a reader to kind of burn it.
Gotcha.
So we just kind of had to switch the pan. And those are the kind of things that we kind of work out through our tastings and testing process.
Speaking of culinary habits, you actually are a registered dietitian.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So how did you make the switch from, well, that's really not a switch. I guess when I think dietitian, I think of someone that works in a hospital or a school lunch person that's a registered dietitian. Were you always on the editorial magazine media side?
No, I wasn't. I got my degree in culinary nutrition from Johnson & Wales, so I was in the culinary schools in that setting. And that program's designed to train culinary professionals in dietetics, which is a very rare combination that you get. A lot of times you'll see dietitians who are not necessarily well-versed in food, but they're well-versed in what dietitians do, which is, for lack of a better term, prescribe diets to certain physiological conditions.
Gotcha.
So all that science-y stuff kind of comes in handy for that particular world. But in something I did here, I actually did my internship at New York Presbyterian. And I worked in Washington Heights in the community outreach kind of thing for dietetics. And it just changed how I looked at it. And there they were truly helping people make these really cool decisions about what they were eating. And that's where I felt my little niche kind of came into play, where I actually knew how to cook and I could speak to people fairly well and kind of explain to them first of all, you want to listen to what they're doing and how they're cooking, and then you can tailor a program that they can actually follow. So I fell in love with that, and then the opportunity to come work at Southern Living kind of came up in a dual role. So I was working as an editor, working on their new kind of initiative to lighten a lot of the food that we were doing, and which is ironic that I wrote a frying book, but
no, but the thing is, and we're gonna talk more about the book. What I like is that half of the book, I would say really half of the book, yeah, it's called The Way to Fry, but half of the book or more is really healthy recipes.
Right.
There are like two chapters all on food that's really not fried.
Right.
So, I mean, even the salads. I mean, you know, fried food every now and then is great. You don't have to eat it every day.
No, and that's not what it's for. You know, there's so much great heritage and legacy that has happened with fried food in the South, and it's raised generations of people, so it can't be all that bad. But for a lot of people's newer lifestyles, it's about balance, and that's what I wanted to put into the book, that you can have your fried chickens and your fried pork chops, but you can balance it with a lot of healthful Southern ingredients that we already eat.
Right.
So that was more or less what I wanted to kind of portray.
Well done. We're going to take a short break,
okay,
and we're going to get deep into it. We're going to get in the fryer,
okay,
and talk The Way to Fry. Listeners, keep listening. We'll be back in a sec.
This one's called Sometimes You Can't Say It Enough, again by Blind Benny on Heritage Radio Network.
I did it. The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We're chatting with Norma King. He's in the studio live in the flesh. So let's get into this book. I picked out some of my favorite, I wouldn't say recipes, but foods that you cover in the book. And I'm going to start first with soft shell crabs.
Okay.
I think this is around the time when, well, like this time or next month, soft shell crabs, they come up everywhere. You start to see them everywhere. Yeah. And I have fond memories because I remember when I first discovered soft shell crabs and started cooking them, and I'm addicted. You have like two or three soft shell crab recipes.
Yeah, there's
here.
A regular fried soft shell crab. There's a soft shell crab Benedict in there. There's some fun stuff. The cool part about those recipes is that we found out through testing, we use evaporated milk to kind of soak them in.
I saw that. I was like, huh.
It's a little different, but it works so well for that particular item. It just kind of has, it gives you a really flaky crust, more so than something that's heavily breaded or kind of weighed down with like buttermilk or something or another type of milk. But the evaporated milk we found just kind of gives you a different type of flaky crust when you cook it.
And with the eggs Benedict, I'm trying to find that one in the book. What did you do? Here it is now. Is that okay? So you did fry that one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I thought this one was like sauteed or something different. But it, again, you use the evaporated milk. What is the key for people purchasing soft shell crabs?
Freshness. They should smell like just salt water. It's kind of a, you want to get it from a certain, you know, kind of like a local purveyor that actually gets those. And a lot of times it's mainly just about the freshness with that, because it's just that quick brief period where they're molting and then you can get them. So you know, any good fishmonger will have quality soft shell crab.
Yes. Next thing you cover in the book that I love, okra.
Yes, ma'am.
Confession.
Uh-huh.
I hated okra up until like 2 years ago.
What?
Oh my gosh, I hated it. I'm a child of the South. I hated it.
You How know did that happen?
I think I saw it too much boiled and the whole slime
thing.
Factor. And then last year I realized that I need to get the okra for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
Get the okra that's kind of really hard and not tender.
Really?
And don't let the pods, that's the whole key, right? The pods, when they burst, that's the slime that comes out.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, I actually like to use the smaller pods of okra. Those are more tender and sweet. So that with a brief flash fry and a light coating, like we have, I think that's the peanut.
Yes, I'm dying to try this. In the book, The Way to Fry, Norman has a recipe, the nutty okra, which is actually in dried roasted peanuts in the batter.
Mm-hmm. And you can use cocktail peanuts as well, but the dry roasted kind of has that little onion, paprika kind of salt thing going on with it. And those are quick. You just cut them, drop them in there, and they're just a really great recipe in general.
So please tell me about the slime factor and how not to get it.
It's overcooking it, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it just kind of comes out as part of the natural cooking process, and it will get worse the more it kind of sits out. But you know, sometimes some people like that.
Well, I mean, you know, it's medicinal. I mean, what I've read that the slime, well, I keep saying the slime, I should not say that.
Was what medicinal, the, like how, like an aloe vera kind of medicinal?
Yeah, and that okra has so many great health qualities, and that,
oh yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that piece is really the key to it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes, that's what I read. But I'm dying to try this. You know, one of the things lately, I've gone on a hunt with all these books about peanuts, and I picked up Jimmy Carter's, one of his cookbooks that his cook or something wrote. I don't know if you have it in here, but I've bought peanut flour recently.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I've been using it a lot.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's so good. And you can, like, stir that with, like, water and make, like, your own, like, kind of peanut spread with it. That sorghum and water together.
Yeah.
And it makes real great cocktails as well. If you
Oh, really?
Yes. If you want to just...
See, I haven't even been going there. I actually use it if I'm frying. The few times a year that I fry, I take peanut flour and mix it with the white flour.
Oh, man. That must be real good.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that stuff. And there's different kinds. There's, you know, you can get the defatted kind. like the 80-20% fat. I mean, exactly. There's all different kinds of varieties, and their purposes are varied for each one. But that stuff is fantastic. I love it.
And so we have to move to probably one of my favorite stories in the whole book, your hot water cornbread story.
Oh, yeah. My Aunt Isaiah and my Aunt Harriet. Those are my people.
Oh, when I heard that story, I died laughing.
It's the truth. It's super true. What ended up happening, my Aunt Isaiah, who was, I think she passed away like she's like 99, but this time she was in her like late 80s.
Wow.
And that's like the matriarch of the whole family. Like that, like she runs the clan. That's my grandfather's, we call him Gang Gang, his oldest sister. So we were Christmas time, and he bought this Virginia ham, and it had this yellow stained recipe card from like Sears, and it had like how to stud it with cloves, and you boil it for so many hours, and you put this kind of like honey molasses glaze on it and then bake it. So he wanted a side dish to go with it, which is hot water cornbread. And I was like, I don't know how to make hot water cornbread. So my Aunt Harriet gets up, oh, I'll show you how to make it, baby, don't worry about it. So she comes over, goes through her whole process. Her secret was finely minced onion and like sugar in her batter. So you put that in there with like a little bit of oil, and then go ahead and get everything ready, make it. So she made her version and left the kitchen. And the whole time, Auntie I is sitting there watching and listening, you know, very, very quiet. Hmm. So after Aunt Harriet leaves, Aunt Isaiah gets up and she goes, do you really want to know how to make it? And I look around, I'm like, well, I know she's the oldest, so I can't get in trouble. So I'm like, yeah, sure. So she kind of showed me her way of doing it. So she added a little bit of bacon grease to the cornmeal. And then her real instruction to me was kind of the art of frying and like what to look for when you're shallow frying. Are you looking for the waves and the ripples, the medium heat that you're going through, and always use a cast iron skillet. So that was kind of her whole thing. And then I think her patties were thinner than Aunt Harriet's.
I would have loved to have been in the kitchen when that went down. Funny. I can only imagine the looks. It's all about the looks, looking like, that is all wrong. Let me show you the right way.
Well, she was very, you know, my auntie I is very quiet. Like she just kind of, you know, she knew she was the ace. So it's kind like she just sat back and let her show me. And it wasn't to overstep her boundary, but she just saw that there were some pieces missing. So she felt that she needed to provide that kind of instruction.
And it's so funny because hot water cornbread is like the simplest thing to make. But if you don't really know how to cook.
Right.
You can really screw hot water cornbread up.
For sure.
It's like 3-4 ingredients.
Uh-huh.
Hot water,
but that
cornmeal.
Water's got to be boiling hot.
It does. It does. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to give you the hot five, the way to fry edition. Keep listening. We'll be back.
This one's Home by Blind Benny, the Narcisse remix on Heritage Radio.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, all of our show archives are on heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitchers. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Here it is, folks, the Hot Five, the Way to Cook edition. Mr. Norman King. So Norman, the Hot Five is a rundown of five things that are on fire. So we get people in the studio and they give us the five things in no order.
Okay.
And these are going to be five tools or tips for frying.
Okay, I got that. You ready?
I'm ready. Okay. Five on your list.
Cast iron skillet.
Cast iron skillet.
12 inches.
Okay.
I like that. That's just my personal
preference. You need a new one or an old one?
Huh?
A new cast iron skillet or heirloom one?
Whichever one.
Okay.
I mean, Lodge makes a great product.
Lodge is the best.
And they're fantastic. All you have to do is fry chicken a couple of times in it, and it's just as good as any kind of heritage brand.
So what do you say for people who say, oh, I'll just use my La Crescette or
I think that's Dutch. Fine, too.
Okay.
I love those. As a matter of fact, I like that. That would be number two would be a Dutch oven. Cast iron enamel Dutch oven, for sure. Okay.
So number five is a frying pan. Yeah. And or a Dutch oven.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay. Number four on the way to fry. Hot five.
Candy thermometer.
Really?
Yeah.
Why so?
Temperature is very important. Like, and you got the difference from 350 to 360 is huge when you're frying. Like, I mean, as far as like how quickly something browns, depending on what's in the actual coating. So you've got, I mean, if there's sugar in it, 360, it'll get a lot more brown than it will at 350.
What do you say to people who say, what, I saw my grandma, my mom, and blah, blah, blah. They never use a thermometer. Why do I need that?
I like it for accuracy.
Cool.
I just like to be consistent and accurate.
Okay.
That's a way to ensure.
So candy thermometer people.
Yeah.
And let me ask this, because I didn't notice it. So some of your recipes, will it say, let your oil get to X number of cool,
they're all in there, and it's most of the time it's over medium heat. We don't do medium high.
Okay, so that's it. Number four, candy thermometer. Mm-hmm. You can find those basically everywhere now.
Yeah, sure.
Number three,
spider.
Yeah,
you need one.
Which size, like a big one or
the little like 4-inch spiders? I think are the best ones, and I don't, not necessarily the ones with the bamboo one on them, but the all stainless, that's what I like to use, or even some that have like a mesh screening on them. Those are fantastic.
So you have to just, for some people, like, what is a spider?
It's like a flat slotted spoon, I guess. And
I call it like an Asian drainer or something, because I feel like the easiest place to find like a huge variety.
Uh-huh.
It's some of the I go to Chinatown to go to some of the best restaurant supply store, and they'll have a whole wall of
so that's a good description.
Yeah, and it's a multi-use thing.
Yeah, you can use it for pretty much anything.
Okay, so number three is a spider.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bamboo handle, guys,
just stainless steel.
Number two,
I like grapeseed oil.
Really?
Yeah, for shallow frying. If you do shallow frying, like, I love grapeseed oil. I like grapeseed oil.
So move away from the peanut oil.
It's not move away. It's just a preference for me. I just really like
it. What are some of your favorite things, of things in the cookbook, particularly that you're using grapeseed oil for?
You can do fried eggs in it. Any of our lightly sauteed stuff. So, there's a tortilla crusted pork in there that you can use it for. I just like the way that it cooks better than I like olive oil or canola or anything else. It just has I just like it.
Cool. Grapeseed oil.
Uh-huh.
Which you pretty much can find now at your normal grocer. You don't have to go to a fancy smashy to find grapeseed oil.
Not really. And you don't need a lot of it. It's just mainly for like that light kind of pan sear. If you're going to use an oil for that technique, that's what I would recommend.
So that's number two, grapeseed oil, folks. And number one,
way to fry cookbook.
That's what you need. This is the definitive Bible of how to fry Southern. Not even really Southern, really.
No, it was just about exploring the actual cooking process. You know, they have books on barbecue. They've got books on cupcakes. And I'm like, why don't they have a book on frying? So that's one of the things that we wanted to show, is just give those great hardcore Southern recipes and then how to balance that plate out, and then do some silly stuff like deep fried moon pies and deep fried pecan pie and sweet tea and all these other kinds of
that's in the
things.
End. You know what I didn't ask you? I have to ask you this. So you had a series on Southern Living's blog, or really website, called Deep Fried Fridays.
Yes,
are you still doing that?
Yeah, we're still doing that.
So what is Deep Fried Fridays?
Deep Fried Fridays came out of a joke where somebody dared me to fry a moon pie.
Oh,
And I took on the challenge, and it worked. So they just kept asking me to do these random things to, you know, can you deep fry Jack and Coke? I'm like, yeah, I'll find a way to do that. Can you deep fry pimento cheese? Yeah, I'll find a way to do that. So They're just kind of giving me new ideas, and we're working on the series now.
So where can people find it on Southern Living?
It's on southernliving.com. And if you just type in Deep Fried Fridays in the search bar, it should pop right up. And there's a whole, like, 6-7 of them.
Okay.
Maybe more of those. I think I did more of those.
And you're on Twitter. I see you're a little active on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Norman King RD.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Anything else? And you know what? I have to say, I'm actually really honored to have you in the studio because I always see you on Today's
really?
Show.
Oh,
people
man.
Can catch you on the Today
yeah,
Show.
Yeah, they can catch me on the Today Show sometimes. That's what I do for the magazine and for stuff like this. It's a great, you know, honor and privilege to do that, to do those kind of things for the brand, and it's gives us some great exposure.
Yeah.
For the South.
So, Norman, congrats
Thank
on your
you.
New book, Southern Living, The Way to Fry, Fresh, Fabulous Recipes for the Modern Southern Cook. Thanks so much for coming on Hot Grease.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you for having me. Hot Grease and The Way to Fry. It's a
I know.
Good combination.
Be well and see you soon.
Okay, you too.
Listeners, thanks so much for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, join me here live every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.